Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I didn't start working in a sketchbook until I had a kid. So these sort of formidable moments of mom going to a residency when I was in eighth grade in high school and then having a kid and picking up the sketchbook, these are really important sort of salient moments in my own trajectory. So my art making has been different at different times. My life is art and art is my life. I really feel like that art is everything.
I am so pleased to welcome Austin Thomas to the podcast today. Austin Thomas is an artist, curator, and community builder, and is currently the exhibitions manager at FIT. A graduate of NYU, she has received numerous residencies and fellowships, including Wave Hill, Gutenberg Arts, the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts, and Smack Mellon. From 2007 to 2014, she directed the influential Pocket Utopia Gallery. In 2016, New York City unveiled her permanent public sculpture for a new park in Brooklyn. She has also done public commissions for the Public Art Fund and Grinnell College. Thomas's work is in the book Living and Sustaining a Creative Life, Essays by 40 Working Artists, and its sequel, The Artist as Culture Producer, edited by Sharon Loudon. And in addition, Austin's work has been shown nationally and internationally and written about in the New York Times, The New Yorker, Art in America, The Brooklyn Rail, The Paris Review, and Hyperallergic. She is a seminar instructor at the New School, where she teaches the Artists as Entrepreneur course. She lives and works in New York City. Austin, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was perfect.
Oh, good.
That was perfect. I forgot all I did, that I did all those things.
You're not the first person who said that. They're like, it's so empowering to have my bio read back to me.
I know. Yeah.
Okay, reflection. Austin. Yes, let's dive in. I want you to share something about your childhood that you feel like is connected to your artist's life today. Maybe a thread that is or has been consistent that you kind of can see the through line.
Sure. Thank you so much. So because this is a mom podcast, let's talk about my mom.
Yes.
So my mom just turned 90. Mm. And she is an artist, very active artist. I wouldn't call her necessarily a contemporary artist showing in galleries, although I showed her in my gallery. Pocket Utopia. Her name is Kay, and I always call her Kay. I don't really call her mom. Mm. So I did a show of her work in Bushwick, which I called Chaosities.
Oh, amazing.
And I really contextualized the work in a contemporary setting. So she's done a lot of black and white work. She started with photography in New York City in the late 50s. And then she learned sumi-e, which is a Japanese brushwork from artists who had moved to New York City from Japan, and then it sort of evolves into more like black and white sumi-e drawing. So my mom has definitely been very influential to me as an artist. And as I said, she just turned 90 and she still works in her sketchbook every day. And she looks at the world through the eyes of an artist. She taught art until she was 80. And then her 80s, she did more like freelance teaching at the Botanic Gardens in Chicago and places like that. And now she just turned 90. She's sort of like, okay, time to coast. but until then, she's been a real force to be reckoned with.
Wow.
And that has definitely taught me perseverance, sketchbook, practice.
I'm glad you brought up the sketchbook so early because it's something I wanted to ask you about. So when you were growing up, was your mom talking with you about art? Was that, you know, like, did you go to museums and galleries together? Were you raised in New York?
So I was born in New York and I lived here for the first 10 years of my life. And then we moved to Illinois.
Okay.
And probably in retrospect, we were talking about art all the time, but I thought it was normal. Mm-hmm. You know, we went to museums. My first like art class was by her. She was my photography teacher in fourth grade. She went to residencies when was in eighth grade. So I remember her teaching me how to do laundry and cook for myself. And then she went again to residencies when I was in high school. So it was a way to learn independence, that she was away for a month at a time in eighth grade, then in high school. So that was formative in terms of learning how to be more independent. And then, yes, there was lots of art in the house. And my dad was a photographer too. They both met because they were members of the Greenwich Village Camera Club.
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah, you know, a famous—
Sounds like a movie.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, a lot of people have that experience in their life. If they're artists and they're involved in the community, it becomes really part of who they are as a person.
Yeah. Okay. I just have to go back to this because I feel like a lot of people who listen to this podcast need to hear this. Your mom taught you to be more independent and cook for yourself and do laundry so that she could go to an artist residency, and that was great and normal.
100%. Yeah.
Yes. Do you hear that?
Yeah.
It's okay.
When we were in eighth grade, this is how you do your laundry. This is how you cook for yourself, or this is how you drive my car, you know, in high school.
And okay, I'm like, not in eighth grade.
And she did it in eighth grade and in high school. So,
like if there was an emergency.
Well, she went for a month when I was in eighth grade and then a month when I was in high school, maybe a freshman or a sophomore. And they were far residencies. She was learning Japanese brushwork and sort of Chinese painting. So she went to Japan for a month and she went to China for a month.
I love that. Like, just, you know, obviously I have these conversations with artists who are currently moms and who have kids, and I run a residency program, and it's a 1 week residency, which is much more, or can be more accessible and sustainable for artists. But it's so great to hear an adult artist say, no, like my mom went for a month and it was fine. Like, and we survived, and I'm probably all the better for it because I had her example of her putting her career as a priority in her life. Like, so great.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're taking the words out of my mouth. No, honestly, that is it. That is it. Moms, dads, go away to an artist residency. You know, you want your kids to self-actualize and become independent. And what better way to do that than to say, see you later.
Absolutely.
Here you go. Here, don't, you know, wash your clothes on cold and put all the whites together and all the color. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So Austin, it was no surprise then when you went to art school, you moved back to New York, you kind of picked up this path. Can you tell me a little bit about just some of the trajectory of your career so far?
Yeah. So, you know, start from eighth grade to high school. So it wasn't so condoned to study art on the college level. I think my parents felt that they became very parental and said, you should study something more practical and we will help you pay for college. And so I studied psychology and women's studies. And my thought was I was going to become a feminist therapist. And then in my last, you know, because art was something my mom did, right? It wasn't something necessarily I do. Just because your mom does something doesn't mean you want to be exactly like her when you become a teenager, the opposite.
Right.
And so, but in one of my last classes in college, and I went to University of Colorado in Boulder, I took an art class and something clicked, like the light went on, as people always have this sort of, you know, revelation experience. That was it. And So I finished my degree in psychology. And by that time, I knew I wanted to be an artist. Mm. I had some other experiences that sort of pointed me in that direction. And I moved to Washington, D.C. after I graduated, with some time in between. And I worked at nonprofits, but I was set up a studio. I knew eventually when I could afford to put myself through graduate school, I would go and study art on my own, in my own way, in my own time. And I went to NYU and therefore knew that going to NYU would have me move back to New York. As I'm sure people have talked about, New York's not an easy city to move to. So to go to school here is a good way to make that transition. So from Washington, D.C., where all the museums are free, it was a great way to kind of come out as an artist.
Totally.
And then go to school at NYU and study art and have that experience as, you know, getting my MFA, doing internships at galleries. And so that was a real great sort of way to really become an artist.
Awesome. Well, let's have you describe your work. I would love for you to describe it in a way that assumes that maybe some of the audience who's listening has never seen your work before. So you can talk a little bit about the mediums that you work in and materials you use and a little bit about your process. And I want to talk specifically about sketchbook maybe after that, so you can keep it a little more general.
Sure. I mean, sketchbook practice is really important, but I didn't start working in a sketchbook until I had a kid. So these sort of formidable moments of mom going to a residency when I was in eighth grade in high school, and then having a kid and picking up the sketchbook, these are really important sort of salient moments in my own trajectory. So my art making has been different at different times. My life is art. And art is my life. I really feel like that art is everything. I've made sculptures, even turning a 1973 El Camino into a, you know, a social space. I've operated a gallery called Pocket Utopia, which I saw as a socially engaged art project. And now I do prints and drawings, and I have a very strong sketchbook practice. You know, I work full time right now. I have a full time job at FIT managing their gallery. So I've kind of developed and always have developed a way of making art that goes along with a way of making my life. So I learned how to make prints in 2016. And now that's primarily what I do. And of course, it, you know, allows one to make a lot at once. And it fits sort of the way of working, walking in the city. The work is very influenced by the architecture in the city. And
Austin, I want to go back about 20 years. How old are your kids now?
Okay, so I have one kid, but we picked up another kid during, it sounds weird, but during the pandemic. I mean, the pandemic changed our lives, everybody's lives. And so I have a 17-year-old who is graduated high school and he's taking a gap year. And we also have an 18-year-old girl who lives with us who, you know, has for almost, you know, for 2.5 years since the pandemic started. And, you know, the pandemic hit New York City and some people didn't have anywhere to go, or, you know, they were stuck at home or they were in homes that they didn't feel comfortable in. And what sort of started as something as an emergency is now a family. We have a family of four, and it's been really great. I don't know what my son would have done. He would have been really lonely.
Amazing. So I'm just looking at kind of the trajectory of your work on your website. And, you know, about 20 years ago is when it looks like your work was much more sculpture heavy. And then you know, I'm guessing motherhood transition, like your work kind of becomes more rooted in a sketchbook and the drawings and prints, like you mentioned. I would love for you to talk a little bit about this body of work, the Perch work, and just kind of maybe that transition, but starting with the, like, all these lovely different perches, like how you, like, what was kind of the concept behind them? It looks like you spent many, many years making these, you know, sculptures, and maybe you could talk about some of the different iterations of them.
Sure. So I do have a body of work called Perches, and there's a permanent sculpture that is in Brooklyn mm-hmm. on the sidewalk that is called Plaza Perch. And I started making them because I really noticed when people engage with art, there is some sort of exchange. And I started to build platforms for that exchange. And then they morphed to fit a particular setting. So, of course, I did one for a car, and I did one for particular architectural spaces. And these were social spaces, social mm-hmm. sculpture that you could use and sit on. And they were sort of treehouse-like. And they did require a lot of building skill and mm-hmm. people to work with and heavy equipment. And I built them up until, you know, throughout my pregnancy, I was very, very active in making the sculptures. And my son was practically born in a wood shop. And, you know, I was carrying around circular saws mm-hmm. when, 7, 8 months pregnant. And then, of course, after he was born, it really was like the first time I had ever sat down in my life. I was like, oh, wow, this is what it's like to sit down. And of course, the work morphed and changed. And that's when I opened a Pocket Utopia, a gallery, a social space, or a socially engaged art project, because I felt like, okay, I could continue making these perches at great expense, right? Mm-hmm. Having somebody watch my kid. And I think if you don't change your life completely when you have a kid, it's almost not worthwhile, right? Mm-hmm. I changed everything. Mm-hmm. And the work became the artwork, the family life, you know, your love of your kid becomes so much more real mm-hmm. when everybody is a sort of co-creative partner. And Pocket Utopia came out of the purchase and to perch, to sort of hang out, to socialize, to engage, to reflect, to pause. Pocket Utopia was also that sort of ideal of a social ideal, a place that is free, that allows people to be who they are in the moment, to create. And therefore, I felt like showing other people's ideas was a way to extend that conversation.
Awesome.
Very much about community, although I wasn't always using that word at the time. I noticed after having the gallery space or the social space in Bushwick 2 years that this very strong community developed out of showing other artists' work.
And Pocket Utopia, it no longer exists?
It does not, but okay. I am thinking about reopening it, maybe as an itinerant, maybe as an itinerant space, or something that is, you know, very inclusive.
Yeah,
and I'm sort of thinking about how that will operate now, with a space, maybe without a space, different types of spaces, a different itinerant platform.
So was that during that season of your life, did Pocket Utopia become your full-time job essentially?
Yes.
So, and you were investing in a brick and mortar space in Brooklyn. That's a lot.
I had actually three different spaces. So from 2007 or 2008 or 9, for a few years, it was in Bushwick. And then it closed for a while and reopened on the Lower East Side. And then briefly, I was in Chelsea. I had merged with another space and the gallery was there. And then we closed in about 2015. And that's when I went back into the studio or into a like community print shop and taught myself how to make prints. But yeah, I mean, the whole time sketching, collaging. I think running a gallery is a great, your own space is a great job for a parent, mm-hmm. because you can set your own schedule, your own hours, you can be flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. But just to, I'm just thinking like of the finances of doing it in a,
yeah. I mean, I ran for sure. I mean, I'm still in a little bit of debt, to be honest. And yeah, it was debt. I mean, when it was in Bushwick, the space was relatively affordable.
Yeah.
When it moved to the Lower East Side, the space, the rent doubled. Wow. And I had to hustle a little bit more. I had to become more commercial, where in Bushwick, I never really sold mm-hmm. anything. It didn't really matter. And when it was on the Lower East Side, I took more teaching gigs and visiting artist gigs, mm-hmm. and tried to sell more art. And it became a little bit more, I had to invest mm-hmm. in being a little bit more part of the artist market just mm-hmm. to survive. It was mm-hmm. definitely a hustle. And then in Chelsea, I wasn't even there that long, maybe yeah. 6 months, because it just became something that myself and my partners, we almost came together to go apart and do, you know, refocus on what other things, like going mm-hmm. my partners went to graduate school. And they had two kids mm-hmm. while we were doing the gallery. And, you know, we just turned our focus to something else. But now I'm ready to think about kind of reopening it in some sort of way.
This episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by the Thriving Artists Map. As an artist, it can sometimes be a struggle to find our compass, to remain rooted in our goals, and to stay on course. There are so many options out there, so many ways to exist in the world, and the ride is often rather lonely. You all probably know by now that community building is my jam, and I'm always trying to figure out the secret to creating a life as an artist that is sustainable and rich with relationships. I co-host a network called the Thrive Together Network with the amazing Jamie Smith, an artist from Vancouver, Canada. On the network, we host weekly art and tea sessions. We have two virtual art residencies a year that our members participate in. We run an exhibition program where everyone commits to showing their work, and so much more. And in 2023, Jamie and I are really rolling out the red carpet for our community. We have created a master plan for our year and have called it the Thriving Artists Map. This map is part curriculum, part planner, with lots of big sister energy to help support and encourage you as you live out your art life and career in 2023. It follows the events, programming, and flow of our network and has so many activities and tips to help you stay on course with your own career goals. We really feel like it's going to be a game changer for so many artists to have this foundation to sort of lean into and this support to receive to move through a yearly rhythm deeply rooted in community. We are so excited about this. We are not alone as we are out here doing this big, important work as artists, and we want you to know that you have everything within you to create the career you want, but doing it with other artists supporting you is literally the best. So you can join us by heading to thrivetogethernetwork.com to learn all about the map, all about the network, and everything that is involved when you sign up and join our community. You will receive a free downloadable copy of the entire Thriving Artists Map once you join the network. And again, that information is available at thrivetogethernetwork.com. We cannot wait to do this work with you. So tell me how your art practice was kind of moving and changing in that time of your life. You know, you already talked a little bit about having to step away from the bigger sculpture work. I'm wondering, you know, just like time management of maintaining a practice and having a gallery and having a kid, like, did your practice just take big breaks during that season? Or, you know, just kind of talk about the transformation a little bit, and then how that those life adjustments actually transformed the physical manifestations of the work, right?
Wow, those are complex questions.
Sorry.
Okay, so I can never stop making art, right? Mm-hmm. That is who I am. My art is life. And, you know, making big sculpture with a child and all that takes, money, time, having somebody
space,
watch your kid, all of that, some things become impossible mm-hmm. without perhaps a lot of money to have a caretaker watch your kid. And I never had anybody watch my kid. Mm. So that's one reason why I opened up Pocket Utopia, because I was sort of losing my mind a little bit. Remember I said, oh, wow, this is what it's like to sit down. I was mm-hmm. very, very active. I always have had a job in New York City, right? And like no one can afford to live here. Mm-hmm. So everybody here works. And I was always making work. So I was working within the art world, making art. And then all of a sudden I have a child and that has to be watched and taken care of and loved, right? And loved. I love my kid. I love my son so much. I do. It's the love of my life. He has a heart of gold. So I made a deal with my husband because I was sort of losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I need to open a gallery. I mean, it was a long and complicated conversation, but essentially I watched a child Monday through Friday, and my Pocket Utopia, which is really my Pocket Utopia, was open Saturday and Sunday.
Mm.
And in a way, my husband is a lawyer and very busy and not an artist, although very creative and kind and a wonderful person. He having that forced time Saturday and Sunday really made him a better parent.
Mm-hmm.
So just like my mom, you know, taking off to a month-long residency when I was in eighth grade made me, you know, a better human being in terms of taking care of myself, I think running a gallery on the weekends made my husband a better parent
mm-hmm.
because I had to go open a space. And I think that shared responsibility, you know, the gallery became something we also managed together in terms of getting the rent paid or negotiating leases. Or
right.
I did a project where we did a salon dedicated to Lawrence Weiner. And Lawrence Weiner at the time had instructions for a conceptual piece that referenced painting, which you remove drywall, like 4x4 square removed or something. And so I couldn't go to the gallery and do it one night and with my interns. And so my husband went and made the Lawrence Weiner piece with the instructions.
Wow, that's
so
awesome.
There was a lot of co-collaborative sort of work. And I think there were definitely times where it was difficult. I remember like carrying my child. I don't live in Brooklyn. I did a long time ago, but I live in Manhattan. So when the gallery was in Bushwick, I commuted, and I have this memory of like carrying my child in the rainstorm to make it to an opening. And of course I'm carrying him and his little booty falls off and it's pouring rain and I'm in the streets of Bushwick and I can't find it. And you know, you're like, why am I doing this?
Why am I doing this? Oh yes.
Right.
Why do I make everything so hard for myself?
Right.
That's a question I ask myself very often.
And then the pandemic, we learned like, oh, we don't have to do this.
Right.
Or, you know, we really, life got reset.
Yeah. Speaking of the pandemic, these COVID sketchbooks are amazing. I love sort of the transition from kind of the simpler compositions that you have on your website earlier on, and then like there's just, I don't know, a much looser like mark making that feels like it's happening in the top row specifically of what's on your website for your sketchbook. Talk to me about your sketchbook practice. Like, how did that come into your life? What does it do for you? What logistically, what does your sketchbook practice look like? I know other artists who are just advocates of having a sketchbook practice, one of them being my great friend, Barbara Campbell Thomas, which I'll have to send you Barbara's work and her sketchbook practice, because I think you would love it. But yeah, talk to me about your practice.
So like many things, like great art ideas, things happen sometimes by accident. And at Pocket Utopia in Bushwick, Pocket Utopia was really one of the first galleries in Bushwick. It wasn't even called Bushwick when I opened up Pocket Utopia. It was called East Williamsburg. And so I got a lot of attention for having an artist-run space mm-hmm. in sort of a burgeoning art neighborhood. And so a liquor company dropped off a whole box. You know, they wanted me to promote their liquor brand. They just, people would come in and we dropped off some liquor, and they dropped off a box of moleskin sketchbooks.
What?
That were beautiful. They said, you know, the liquor brand, I forget what it was, on the back. And so the liquor came in one box, which we opened right away and started drinking. And the moleskins, which I thought was literature, I thought it was like, just went into the corner. And here we are at Pocket Utopia. It's only open on Saturdays and Sundays. I didn't have a desk or a chair. We just all sat on the floor and we put art on the wall. And we talked about art and we drank. And sometimes, not all the time.
Oh, as one does. Yep.
Yeah. Running a gallery causes you to drink. So yes. Finally, maybe like 6 months later, maybe a year later, cleaning up, I was like, what is in this box? We have to get rid of this box. And I opened it up, and inside was a case, maybe of 20 sketchbooks, moleskin, beautiful.
And those
sketchbooks
are like great quality, expensive.
Right. Wow. And they said Williamsburg. I think they said Williamsburg, New York, or Williamsburg on the front. I'm sure I have one in my studio. Williamsburg on the front. And the liquor brand on the back, and I passed them out to whoever was there. And then I had like 10 sketchbooks in the bottom. And I was like, well, I guess I'll draw them. I guess I will. So
what a great story.
So from that moment, and I would draw at the gallery and therefore I would use stencils or rulers or stencils I made myself to change up the mark making, that they became part of a conversation. So that's why there are a lot of stencils, or they seem abstract. I'm sort of listening to what's going on around me. Now, you know, salons are happening. Pocket Utopia is becoming embedded in the neighborhood, part of the conversation. I get to listen a little bit to the conversation and draw at the same time. And then now my son is, you know, in kindergarten. I'm still running the space. Now he's in second grade and I'm still running the space and I'm taking my kid to school every day. And I live in Manhattan, but, you know, I'm not a fancy person. And sometimes the moms in Manhattan are fancy and a way for me to like point of entry when they're all having coffee, or not just moms, but the grownups, because, you know, it was a variety of people. I would order coffee and take out my sketchbook to make me feel comfortable and draw while they were talking. And there were a lot of like kvetching, complaining, and talking about, you know, everything parents do about their kids. And so the sketchbooks became even more involved. And then I noticed I was making other moms feel comfortable by drawing, by revealing. I was almost like the fire, the hearth, you know, or the hearth.
Yeah. Like, and has this cozy tone to it. You're kind of settling in to your body, to the space. It is like a form of meditation.
And people would feel more comfortable sitting down, having coffee after they drop their kid off at school for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour, whatever. And I noticed I was doing the same thing at Pocket Utopia with these moms, sort of building a community. And so when I reopened Pocket Utopia on the Lower East Side, a lot of, I say moms, but it wasn't just moms. A lot of the parents helped me with that space.
Wow.
By helping me renovate, and it became a totally different community. They weren't artists necessarily, you know, lawyers or people who worked at museums, or, you know, a firefighter, et cetera. I sort of moved that one element of art making, sketchbook, communicating, talking, and drawing while other people are talking, just to another place.
Wow. Oh, it's so interesting, because I expected you to talk all about the individual feeling, the individual journey of having a sketchbook. Like, this is for me, this is something I need. And it, like, you took it in this whole totally different place of, this has become about community and relationships.
And in a way, my sketchbooks are like a socially engaged art project. I've done them on the subway, and I have some of those on my website, where I was taking the subway to the Wave Hill residency, and I was on the train for an hour, and I'm just drawing and listening to the conversations around me. And again, I noticed that on the subway, people are more comfortable. They feel safer. They see somebody with a set of watercolors on the train.
Mm-hmm.
So very much so. Actually, it is hard for me to draw without anybody around.
So interesting.
So I do, I listen to podcasts or lectures, but I'm more comfortable drawing. They're really about drawing down energy.
Yeah.
And sketching the vibe.
Austin, tell me about your art practice these days, like kind of a week in the life of, you know, you have a full-time job running a gallery for FIT, and you're a practicing socially engaged artist, and, you know, you're a citizen of New York City, and you're a parent. I'm just wondering about how your art practice is fitting into your life right now.
That sounds like so much responsibility. But, you know, so now I make my prints at a community print shop.
Okay.
And again, it is sort of a socially engaged place, or more community. It's a place where people teach lessons. And I've done that at a variety of places in New York City. So I learned how to print at Gutenberg Arts, which is in New Jersey. And they really maybe took their cues from the Robert Blackburn print shop, which is at the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts. And both those spaces are very community engaged. Gutenberg has a garden and called Gutten Garden, I think it's called. And they offer classes to, you know, grade school and junior high. And they've had a camp and a festival. And that's where I learned how to make prints. And the prints are, they're sort of monotypes, and they are a lot of, they sort of came from the imagery in the sketchbook. So very architectural shapes. And now the shapes feel very much of my day-to-day walking to and from work, where I'm looking, you know, the yellows might be the yellow of, you know, and red of traffic lights, the rectangles of architecture, the color is super important in terms of the blue sky, or they seem very, to me, my work is very much about a walking, working, relating to what's around me. And I mean, there's more to that. I mean, I work at FIT and have also taught. And so I really believe in, you know, giving voice to people who have creative ideas. You know, it's about interfacing to me. I mean, you use that word too.
Yeah.
And, you know, art making gives me a way to connect to people.
Yeah. Yeah. That word interfacing, I have it as a question, talking about sort of the interfacing of the personal and the cultural. And I think you've described that so well, just the ways that your practice and the things that you've chosen to focus on as your career have both been about your own you know, intentions and your own inspiration and your own path, but then always kind of rooted in community, rooted in, you know, bringing people together in relationship. Just as a, like a peer, as somebody who also does a lot of that work, you know, building a podcast and arts community. I mean, sometimes it's hard to find that balance of giving yourself away to others, and then what do you keep for yourself, and what kind of energy do you need for your own practice? I think I've been going through a big shift this year, just realizing that I really can't operate to the extent of the ways that I've operated in the past. And I think really wanting to move to spaces of protecting more of my time and my energy for myself, and not having so much on my plate other than just being an artist and maybe a few other things.
An artist, a mom, a worker.
Just those few things.
But I think, meditation has really helped me. And my work is a meditation now, like those shapes and the color. And when I'm in the print shop, I allow sort of chance to take over, or I'm not overthinking the art making when I'm actually creating something. And, you know, as I mentioned to you that, you know, now we're talking, it's sort of on my lunch hour, and I come to my studio, which is a 10-minute walk from FIT, and I don't make work during that short period of time, but I meditate here. And so I really feel that that has helped me balance. I think balance is super important, and maybe art is balance. Your practice is balance, finding work balance, you know, that's, you know, parent balance, partner balance, and meditation has definitely been a part of that.
A couple more questions, Austin. I want to know, what are some goals that you have either for yourself or your art career? Or just your career in general over the next 6 months to a year?
Wow. So I definitely am starting to, I've been at my job for almost 5 years, and I'm, as I said, I want to reopen Pocket Utopia. And so I'm starting to make an exit strategy. And that means always going back to the art. Like when I closed Pocket Utopia, I taught myself how to make prints and spent more time doing that. So now I am starting to, like, that is my goal, is is making that exit strategy. I just renewed the lease on this space for 3 more years, and I've often worked without a studio, looked at the world as studio, and I want to do that again in about 3 years. So I'm thinking about how I will, you know, work within that different way. I really believe in, of course, being inclusive, but young voices. I have a lot of people who are 24 in my life, and I'm really keen on supporting them in ways that I can. And, you know, as my kid gets older, how I can support our kids, how I can support them in their dreams. So I would say sort of broadly, those are my goals.
So beautiful. Okay, Austin, let's close with our 5 final questions that help us get to know you a little bit better. These are meant to kind of be quick, fun questions. Answer however you want. Who is your biggest art crush?
I am not monogamous when it comes to art crushes. I mean, I love so many.
Some favorites.
Okay, so I really like Rebecca Belmore. Very different than my own work. She was a star in the Whitney Biennial. I don't know if you went there and saw it, but I think she might be Canadian. She is an Indigenous artist, and she had the most beautiful piece in the Whitney Biennial. It's beautiful. And also, I really love Kennedy Yanko. She does these crazy sculptures, and she's sort of a badass. She takes things out of scrap yards and crushes trucks. And so I really appreciate that. So two women, very different sensibilities, very strong, powerful forces, making very different work for myself that allows me to sort of dream and think and admire and love.
Awesome. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Okay. So I am a no-fly pioneer.
Oh.
I don't fly because I think it's not great for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I hear a story about horrible things on airplanes and airports, I'm like, well, see you later. So I guess upstate.
Okay.
You know, like this weekend, I'm going to go see, there's an Italian art collection, like the Manzoni collection. And you can take the train there and they come pick you up.
Wow.
So an Art Povera collection, I will go see that. So upstate is maybe my dream trip.
I love that. Okay. Tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
Sure. So I've taught a couple of years at the New School, Artist as Entrepreneur, and I always make my students read this book called Big Magic,
yes.
Creative Living.
Liz Gilbert.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Creative Living Beyond Fear. And it's good for anybody who, writer, musician, artist, et cetera, cook, tattoo artist, whatever. That's a very inspirational book that, you know, supports you being on that curious journey.
Great, great suggestion, and such a good book. I feel like that's a one to revisit every couple of years too.
Absolutely.
Okay, favorite meal.
Okay, I'm like a beer and chips person. Beer and chips.
I love
it. I used to make beer when I had the gallery. I met somebody who was a brew person, and we used to brew like Pocket Hoptopia.
Oh, and, so cool.
You know, I try not to drink as much beer because it makes you fat. Really does.
Yeah.
But maybe so just beer and chips. No other meal to follow that. Just those two things.
Okay. And Austin, who would you like to give a shout out to for thanking or supporting your work?
Wow. Okay. So I want to shout out to Sharon Loudon for sure, since she has edited two books that I'm in, and she is just ridiculously supportive. And Sally Morgan Lehman, who runs the gallery that I work at and will pick me up at the train station when I go upstate. And there's a young artist, Tracy Johnson, who just turned 24. And as I said, I really believe in 24-year-old women, and I love her. And so those three people.
Ah, so good. I just have to put a plug in for Sharon. I have both the books, and she was the keynote speaker for my MFA, which I've actually seen her several times. She was at CCAC when I was there 1 year, and that's quite a gig, all the speaking she does. But anyway, very inspirational, and you know, kind of was one of the only people when I was in grad school and undergrad, not that she was directly talking about parenthood in the arts, but she was talking about how do we create a life as artists, which, you know, is something that can be looked down upon, especially in sort of New York art star, art world culture. Everybody, you know, we don't want to talk about like the dirty dishes in the sink and the kids that were hiding in the closet when we're like big art stars, right? So,
right.
Just wanted to give that reference too, because Sharon and her books have definitely been part of, you know, my liturgy of like, oh, like this is, we can make this more visible. We can have these conversations, right?
Yeah, me so, too. Yeah.
Thank you, Sharon. All right.
Thank you,
Austin. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was really fun.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.